don't we go ahead and get started? And Jeanette will catch up with us once she gets here. So my name is Mike Buhlman, and I am on the university staffing team at Microsoft. I work out of our headquarters in Redmond, and I work with students who are interested in full-time jobs or internships in software development at the company. So I work out of our Redmond headquarters, but I spend a significant amount of time traveling to Europe to talk to students. So the scope of this presentation is talking about how applying for a job has evolved or changed in some ways in the age of social media, and in other ways it hasn't. And I'll break down what that difference is once we go through the presentation. Since we have a smaller group, I want to do a quick just ask of the people who are here kind of what your background is and what you're hoping to get out of this next 45 minutes with me. So let's start here. Sounds good. All right.
I'm Dario Molto, second year computer science student.
Something similar. Okay, very good. Yep.
I'm Justine from Porta. Also, I'm a second year student.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Got it. And I know, so Daryl, I know that you're software development, computer science. Are you both as well? Got it. And you as well? And you as well? Oh, journalist. Got it. Okay. Very good. Very good. So we'll try to address each of those as we go through the presentation. So our agenda for today. First of all, we're going to talk about, you know, what is social media? It's kind of a new thing, and so we'll look at the different kinds of websites that are out there to help people connect in ways they haven't been able to before. Then we'll talk about how companies are using it today to connect to potential future employees, to get their brand out there, to market their opportunities, to express what their values and their culture of their company are. We'll talk about how you can use it as a candidate who's looking for a job. Certain tools like LinkedIn have really changed the way that you might find a job in this economy. Some ways that it hasn't changed is that you still need to have a great resume and a CV. So if you're hoping to not have to write one anymore, I'm sorry. You're going to have to write one, because a great CV is going to give you the content that you need to be successful when using a tool like LinkedIn. Then we'll have some key takeaways, and we'll end with some Q&A. So, here are some examples of social media sites. The most ubiquitous one is probably Facebook. Everyone knows Facebook. Google+, Yammer, Twitter, YouTube, Viadu, and LinkedIn. These all serve a different purpose in the current social media space, and we're going to focus on just a couple of them. We're going to focus on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. That's not to discount the rest, but just it makes the most sense to talk about those when it comes to recruiting at a company. So how are companies using it today? The number one reason they're using it is to find the best employees. Especially in a place like software development, there is a lot more demand for really fantastic software developers than there are software developers who are trained and ready to go. So one of the things that Microsoft does, that Google does, that Facebook does, is we try to find the best and the brightest all over the world. In the past, that was challenging, because if you didn't go in person to somewhere, you didn't necessarily meet them or get to know about them. Now with tools like LinkedIn and just the internet itself, applying on websites, it has flattened the way that companies can interact with people around the world. So to me, a candidate who is studying computer science in Malta is no more distant from me than someone who's studying in the United States. And that makes a big difference. We used to reach a large population. It's relatively cheap to advertise online as opposed to putting up a flyer in the entire country of France, for example. They use it to express their values. So you'll see more and more companies going on to Twitter and tools like that to express an opinion about something. That's different from what we've seen before. They use it to educate the general population. Just having a website up allows you to reach, in a passive way, millions of people with what jobs are out there, what are our values, what is your career prospect in a company like ours. It's changed the way that we think about things. The next slide is a video from someone at Microsoft in the something I believe it's called global branding when it comes to recruiting opportunities, talking about how Microsoft is using this new environment today.
So there's a couple questions on Twitter regarding the candidate experience and how your organizations are using social media to gauge the candidate experience and to improve upon it, because that seems to be a pretty hot topic right now.
I think what we've tried to do in terms of candidate experience is really customize the messages that we're feeding to prospects. And so if they're interested in one particular group at Microsoft, let's say entertainment and devices, we've tried to customize the job distribution and the messaging that we're getting out to those people. And so we've gotten pretty specific in terms of the different groups that we have on LinkedIn. We've gotten to the point where we not only have 100-plus recruiter groups on LinkedIn, we have subgroups under those groups. We have all kinds of fan pages on Facebook, and as I mentioned before, we have groups that tie in to those fan pages. But what we're going to be looking forward to doing this upcoming year is working with Jobs to Web and utilizing their platform as a way to centralize the way that we distribute jobs. So that's going to be very important, I think, to the candidate's experience. And also just providing a lot of different widgets that we can put on blogs and on Facebook and other social networking sites that allow people to really search our global careers page from any of those sites, and also to really increase the way that we do our employee referrals. And so I think that's really going to enhance it, because at any given time, the candidates are going to know I'm on this page, and I can go in one click to your global career site. And that's really important to us, because you know, right now it is a little fragmented. So we're extremely excited about the year ahead and just really being able to leverage and streamline all of those different things that we have working for us right now that are very product and business group specific.
So you end up seeing you know, you have a company like Microsoft, huge company, 90,000 people all over the world. And rather than going out there and just saying, hey, we're Microsoft, come work for us, which could be effective, we can go out there and we can target each individual person and say, okay, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? What's your motivators? What are your passions? And try to find the part of our company that most interests them. And so you'll see companies all over the world doing exactly that now that they have a tool like this to do it with. So some further examples with Microsoft. Using a tool like Twitter. Twitter is a very, you know, 140 characters or less. You can't say a lot just in a Twitter post, but you can link to things and you can engage people. So you can do things like product updates. You know, when people are announcing new products in any company, they use Twitter. And we'd express our values, like I said before, taking a stand for certain things that are important to us. The next would be the company website with things like job postings and career information. You can go onto the company website and learn about each individual group within Microsoft. The power you have today to learn about a company before you even talk to us is more than it's ever been before. In the past, you'd have to talk to a recruiter, you'd have to talk to somebody in the business, in the company, to learn about the most basic things about a company. Now you can do all that for free online. And so that changes the kinds of conversations that we're able to have with you, because you come to the table knowing a lot more about us. And so I can focus on the specific questions that you might have, rather than say, you know, what does Xbox do? You guys already know all that stuff. And so we can have a more enlightened conversation about things. And finally, LinkedIn. It's one of the biggest changes out there. And it's a big way that we can find you and that you can find us. More specifically about LinkedIn, it's a really powerful professional network. So a recruiter will have an account. A student will have an account. And on your student account, you'll list the things about you. So, hey, I studied this. I'm interested in this. Here are my accomplishments. Then as a recruiter, I can go and I can look for those things and say, hey, I think I want to talk to this person. It changes the way that we interact. So if you come to the website and you apply, that's me being passive and you being active. I just set up a website link somewhere, and you submit your resume. Now with LinkedIn, I can turn that dynamic around. And you're the passive one, and I'm the active one. where you're saying, hey, here's all the stuff about me that you might want to know. And then me as a recruiter can come in and say, hey, I think that guy'd be great. Changes the way we talk about things. We can search for candidates by university, by skills, by the endorsements they get from other people. That's one of the newer features on LinkedIn, is you can endorse people for different skills or attributes that they have. That's one of the ways that we look at candidates. And on LinkedIn, you have a better, what we call a hit rate, a better success rate, when you find somebody on LinkedIn versus you find a random person in the street. Because I'm able to assess a couple more things about you that I wouldn't be able to otherwise. Just like when you're looking for companies, you can know more about us than you have in the past. So how can you use social media? First is just to educate yourself, to find out more about what are the jobs that are out there. You can look at your skills, your experience, and try to match that up with what the available jobs are. That way, when you are applying for jobs, you have a much better chance of success. You can figure out what the qualifications are. You know, hey, I really want to be a software developer. I'm going to be looking for a job in 2 years. It looks like a lot of the software developer jobs are going to require Java or C++ or C# experience or data mining or cloud computing, and I don't have that yet. Now I have 2 years to figure that out and make that happen. And you can find out what the company values are based on the website, based on Glassdoor. Glassdoor, is a, those of you who aren't familiar, is a website where employees or former employees can go onto the site and review the company. Say, here's what I like about working there. Here's what I didn't like about working there. Here's what the interviews were like. They put salary information, which is sometimes accurate and usually not. But you can find out a lot of information on there. You can also use it to promote yourself. So you can use it to apply on the company website, to start a blog, or to create a LinkedIn profile. More and more students now are starting blogs that talk about the things that they're passionate about. And they put that link right on their CV, right in LinkedIn. That way a recruiter like me can go check out the things that they're passionate about. I can look at their portfolio if they have one. That's a little bit different than it used to be. So LinkedIn some more. You can find a company. You can search for a recruiting contact. One of the most confusing things about recruiting now is probably finding the right person. And so LinkedIn's a great tool to find that right recruiting contact for the company, for the job, for the position that you're interested in. And you can contact the recruiter. You can email them your CV and talk to them about what your interests are. Here's an example slide from LinkedIn. Here you can just type in, okay, what's the company's name? So you can type in this case, Microsoft or Facebook or Google. And now you can start to search, okay, what are the different positions, locations, different attributes of the job that might be interesting to me? That's something that's new. Now on the flip side, as a recruiter, I can do the exact same thing. I can go back to this previous slide, and I can type in a university. I can type in a country. I can type in a type of technology and say, hey, pull up a list of 1,000 people who might have C++ development experience. And then I get another screen like just like this one, but then I can filter down by location, by degree level, by level of experience. That's one of the ways that we headhunt at Microsoft, is by going into this and pulling up the information. Now, I can't headhunt you. I can't find out, hey, this person's got a lot of experience in, you know, XYZ area, unless you tell me about it in a way that's effective. And that's why some things haven't changed. Because you need to still have a compelling CV or resume with those key bullet points that you can then copy and paste onto these different media sites so that I can find you. So I want to spend a little bit of time here talking about the CV and the resume, because it tends to be one of the more challenging things. And on top of that, it's one of the most important, because if you don't have a good CV or resume, if I can't look at a piece of paper and say, I think I want to talk to that person, then I won't be able to talk to you. I won't have a reason to call you over somebody else. So let's talk about the CV resume, because that's sort of your ticket in the door. The key sections include, first of all, your contact information. That's really important. Some people forget that. You get a resume and there's no name or phone number or email address, and you say, wow, this person's great, and I don't know who they are. So just a simple reminder to put that up there. Next would be your academic history. Third, your job experience. And fourth, any other activities or leadership that you've demonstrated. So for example, Imagine Cup. Let's go into detail on those key sections, except for contact information. We're going to assume that we can do that one just sort of unsaid. So in your academic history section, you have both a required section and an optional section. So under required section, you've got to tell me your university. you've got to tell me what your degree is. So what are you earning, a bachelor degree, a master's degree, a PhD? You've got to tell me what you're studying. What's your degree in? Computer science, finance, business administration, English literature, whatever it happens to be. And then finally, what your graduation date is. Your grad date is important because it helps us determine whether you should have an internship or a full-time position. And I know that sometimes the graduation date is a little bit unknown or it can be a little bit fuzzy. Put your best guess. So let's say you're expecting to graduate with your bachelor's degree in next month, August 2013, but you might get your master's degree. So then your graduation date might be 2 years from now. Just put your best guess, and then we can talk about it later on if it ends up being a little bit fuzzy. And then you have some optional things you can put in. That would include putting in the relevant courses or classes that you've taken. So if you're a computer science major, putting in your C++ development class, introduction to algorithms, all the data structures, all those kinds of things. You'll want to list any big projects, such as a thesis or a dissertation. Tell me what it is and what about it I should know. You'll also want to tell me what your class projects have been, the big ones, the ones that have to do with what you want to do as a professional. And then any research that you've done. So if you've done in-class research, out-of-class research, if it's relevant, you can put it in there. Any questions on the academic section of your resume? That usually goes at the top, and it always contains that information. Any questions on that? Yeah. If you did, sorry, can you repeat that? Oh, yeah, so the optional stuff you would put right into the academic section. The reason I say it's optional is because if it doesn't apply to you, then you don't have to include it. So, for example, if you haven't done let's say you're doing a bachelor's degree and you haven't done a thesis or a dissertation, then you just simply wouldn't put one in there. But otherwise, you'd put it all in the same section. That way I can say, okay, here's what this person's done in university.
Hello. Probably talk loud enough, but one thing I would add here too, my name is Jeanette, sorry for being a little late, but one thing I would add here too is that we're used to, as recruiters, we're used to getting resumes that are multiple pages long, and that's great if you have the information that you need to fully express yourself, but we're going to be spending roughly anywhere from 30 seconds to 1.5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes on each resume. Last year alone, I had over 7,000 resumes that I had to go through for candidates that were interested in 50 positions that I had to offer. And so you're going through, as a recruiter, you're going through a huge amount of volume with candidates' interests in my region only, and I deal with the Middle East and Africa. So I was focusing on just candidates in that region. So if you can imagine from a worldwide standpoint how many resumes we go through, it's really important that you're getting the most important information listed in an efficient way. So you don't want to spend a full page talking just about this information. You want to spend maybe a fifth of the page or less with this information. And then the meaty stuff, so that's like your experiences and the projects, that should take up the bulk amount of your resume. And your resume should really be at maximum 2 pages. Because if your resume is like 14 pages long or 16, which we've seen from some candidates, which is okay because it's great that you want to get everything out there. But if we have 2 minutes to go through that, how are we going to pick through all the projects you list and everything else that you're going to list to really make sure that we're understanding who you are as a candidate and why you would be a great fit for the position? So just kind of keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And one thing that's going to probably be a little bit confusing to a lot of people is that, like, not all companies will agree worldwide on what the right resume looks like. This is not like a one template, which puts you guys in a bit of a position of having to try to guess what we want. What I will say in general, like Jeanette said, is that a U.S.-based company like Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Amazon will look to see a one-page resume from someone who's at their bachelor's degree or master's degree level. And if you're at a PhD level, it might be 2 or 3 pages. And that'll include lists of your research that you've done. It'll be more like a CV as opposed to a job resume. Where you'll also, like companies in Europe will be used to seeing 3-page resumes where it lists, you know, your high school or your grade school, your primary school. And we're just not used to that. So, like, as a recruiter for Western Europe, like, I'm used to seeing all different kinds of resumes. But, like, if you're not applying, for example, to me and Microsoft, you might get someone who doesn't like to see that so much. So I would recommend sort of tailoring as much as you can to where the company is from and what they're looking for. And you'll usually find that information online at their website. They'll usually tell you what they want. So next section is experience and skills. This is usually the biggest, meatiest part of your resume. And here you're going to list things like your work experiences, your internships. When you do that, you'll want to talk about what the company was, when you were employed there, and what you did. What I tend to see is a student will just simply list, like, I was employed at, you know, Microsoft. And I'm like, okay, that's a good company, but like, what did you do there? Because that's what I really care about. So what ends up happening is you spend a lot of time on these, what we call these bullet points. So it's, if I'm me, I'm the Microsoft, you know, university's recruiter, that's my title. And then I have line by line talking about the highest value, most complex things that I did there that might get somebody interested in talking to me about the experiences that I have. The next would be project experience. So if you were programming, what language did you use? What technologies were involved in your project? You might talk about academic clubs or other organizations that you've been in. You might talk about what your programming languages are. So, you know, how many years have you been programming in C++? And what level would you consider yourself? Are you a beginner, intermediate? Do you feel like you're advanced? Be sure to report this honestly. Because if you say, hey, I'm an expert in C#, and you come into an interview, the interviewer might say, hey, let's do this coding problem in C#. And you're like, oh, I'm really not that good. You don't want to be in that position. So just be honest about it. And then if you have any publications, any patents, those are things to put in there as well. This ends up being a very meaty section. And what you really want to do is recap in you know, small chunks the most sort of impressive or technical or complex things that you've done in a given position. What you'll find as you get more and more experience, you'll have to start dropping the least value positions or titles from your resume to keep it to that one-page format. And it's really painful. I remember the first time I had to, you know, give up my, you know, first job in high school from my resume. I couldn't talk about how I was working at, you know, the retail store, like checking people out and keeping my cash drawer balanced. It was hard for me to give that up, but you have to do it at some point. So it's sort of like ripping the Band-Aid off. Because, you know, you spend a lot of time writing those bullets, and you're like, yeah, those are, but you got to get rid of it. Finally, the last section that you might think about would be activities and leadership. And this is optional, and I say it's optional based on the kind of job that you're going for. So certain jobs you'll need this section, and certain jobs you won't as much. So I'll give you an example. If you're applying for, like, to do community service, like, activities and leadership are going to be critical to them seeing, like, yeah, this person's really passionate about community service. If you're applying to more of a business role or a software development role, you know, community service would be really interesting and would show character, but it wouldn't talk to the core attributes of being a computer programmer. So you have to then start balancing, okay, what should I prioritize? Do I have more to talk about when it comes to computer science, and so I'm going to talk about less when it comes to outside activities? Or should I talk more about outside activities and less about computer science? It's a balancing act that you have to go through. So the key sections here might be community involvement, non-academic groups or any club leadership, any athletics or activities that you've been involved in. Another thing about this would be it's really tempting to just list a bunch of titles. So, hey, I was, you know, the president or the vice president or things like that. As a recruiter, I don't really care about what your title was. I care about what you did. So if you're going to say, hey, I was a president of something, like, give me an example of, like, something you did as president. It'd be like if you, and you're imagining a presentation, and you went to an interview afterwards, and you're like, hey, I was the CEO of my Imagine Cup team. And they're like, okay, that's nice. But, like, what did you do? That's the part they care about. Some other tips. First, include data points that distinguish you from other candidates, or at least make you stand out. Think about the most unique, special things that you've done, and that's what you should talk about. Jeanette mentioned this. It's all about quality over quantity. Keep it to one page if you're planning on applying to a U.S. company. If it's a Europe-based company, then you have a little bit more flexibility because they see different things. But the more condensed you can make that first page, the better. Because when a recruiter like me looks at it for 30 seconds, you know, I'll see the first page, and if everything on there is awesome, boom, I'm going to call you. I read the first page, I'm like, okay, there's not much there. Second page, not much there. Third page, and I got 10 more pages to go. I'm like, is there really going to be much I'm going to see if I keep turning the page? So the most important things, first page. Be honest about your skills and abilities. If you don't have experience in something, don't talk about it. If you're not that good at something, like, don't overinflate your experience in it. So if you're not an expert in C++, don't say you're an expert in C++. Buzzwords like that, expert, advanced, novice, don't really matter much to me, because I'm going to assess your C++ abilities by looking at the project you've done in C++. That'll tell me a lot more than just a label. And finally, proofread. You don't want typos and things like that on your resume. It's like it's the thing that more employers will see of you than anything else. And so make sure that it's really clean and you've read it through a lot of times. You have your friend read it through. Make sure there's no problems with it. Next is a video talking about how candidates and employers are interacting using these same sites. I'm not sure why the video got so dark. Anyways, we'll skip through that. You saw that. I'm going to talk about it a little bit here anyways, so, because it was fading out on us. So what are some key takeaways? The one that stood out to me when I saw that was make sure that the information you have online is appropriate, the public information. So for example, you know, what you put as your profile picture on like Facebook, Skype, LinkedIn, make sure it's appropriate. I remember I saw a resume. I was like, okay, this is a good candidate. And then I call him up on Skype, and we're going to have an interview. And the picture is of a Playboy bunny. And I'm like, dude, like, you got to catch that stuff. I still assessed him based on his merits, but that's a bad first impression. Second, your contact information. You know, make sure your email address is professional. You know, I've seen ones where it's just not appropriate. And I won't go into more. And your Skype name, too. And then finally, with LinkedIn, you know, you can use that to find jobs and recruiters. We can use it to find you. And then as Facebook goes, this is just Annette and I, personal preference. We use it as a personal relationship tool, not as a recruiting tool. So, like, our preference would be not to, like, Facebook us unless we actually know who you are. I'll get, like, random people, like, Facebook friending me, and I'm like, okay, I don't know who this is. And so it's like, no, we're not friends. But if we know each other, like, then I'm good. Just a personal thing. So, questions. Questions about resumes, LinkedIn, Facebook, applications, company websites. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I pulled those videos from YouTube, my interpretation of that would be poor communication would be if someone had, let's say, on their LinkedIn profile, like major errors when it came to spelling, grammar, formatting. It could also be if they just weren't timely in getting back to you. So let's say that, I email a candidate on LinkedIn and I don't hear back for a long time. That might be considered poor communication as well. Or if you're just like, let's say you're just, IMing with somebody and they're just not professional. That could be an example as well. I don't see that very often, to be honest with you. I think most people get it. But there are those few times when you have the person with the profile picture and you're just like, I don't know what you were thinking. So, yeah. Just that's why I say the public stuff. I don't go into people's Facebooks. I don't need to know. I don't care. But if public stuff is what I'm talking about. So most people have their Facebooks locked off to be their friends only. That's the way you should have it, in my opinion. That's the way mine is. And so that's what I would say about that. Now other things that are more public like LinkedIn and things like that. Again, make sure it's appropriate. Make sure it's professional. It's sort of your image. If you wouldn't hand somebody your resume. And it was riddled with errors, and it had a picture of a Playboy bunny on it. It shouldn't be on your LinkedIn profile. It shouldn't be anywhere else. So that's what I would say about that. But I do know of other people, not in Microsoft, and I will be very honest, I don't know anybody in Microsoft who does this, but other companies who will go phishing on social media sites for inappropriate information. I don't do it because I don't really care. But if it pops in front of me, I can't help but see it.
I'll definitely add on to that as well. So one of the things that Mike mentioned in the presentation is using Facebook. Certain recruiters will use Facebook more as their own personal social media tool as opposed to other forms. So LinkedIn, the whole basis and the whole structure of LinkedIn is to use it from a job standpoint. So it's a site, it's a social media site that you can actually go on, upload your resume, look for jobs, find employers that are looking for you. And that's what the whole structure is based around, whereas Facebook is more of a friends tool. And so when in that video, when it does talk about employers looking at social media tools, I think especially for maybe smaller employers, they will look because it's really important that sometimes for them that they know who these new employees are that they're going to be coming in from start to finish. And so it's a little easier. But for us and for big companies in general, I would say that it's a little harder to literally go through every single resume and start kind of Facebook stalking or
doing I wouldn't other things. If I had 10 hours a day assigned to that, I still wouldn't want to do it. It doesn't interest me.
Yeah, and so I think that's probably where you're going to see it the most. When I've talked to people that work at Facebook, recruiters that work at Facebook and Google, they really don't use it. Even people at Facebook don't use it as much as you would think they do because there just isn't enough time in the day to actually go through and specifically pick out. Now, if you friend requests me, I'm probably going to deny it, like Mike said, unless I know you personally, like you were one of my interns or I had a really strong connection with you when we interviewed. But don't take offense to that. Really don't, because a lot of recruiters will use that. But go on to LinkedIn, friend requests. I accept everybody on LinkedIn because I'm just like, why not? If you're applying for jobs and you're interested in Microsoft, that's great. Let's get you on board and you can look at some of my contacts and maybe connect with other people as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now everyone can take an online course from Coursera and et cetera from this site. How important is it to see such a course in someone's CV?
At the end of the day, what we're looking for is the skills that somebody has. So if that person has learned those skills through an online course, great. If they learned it through the university, great. If they learned it through their Imagine Cup project, great. At the end of the day, we care about what you bring to the table as far as what your achievements are, what you can do. We hire computer programmers who are entirely self-taught. But they're impressive self-taught programmers. And so they can come to the interview just like anybody else. The guy who has a PhD from Stanford will interview next to the guy who has just a ton of experience in like coding on the weekends, and they can both get the job. Your skills are what matter to us.
So a good GitHub profile would be more relevant than a good CV or something?
Okay. So like they're both important. Like your CV is still probably like the number one thing that people are going to be seeing. So that's why I spent some time talking about it. And your CV, like the experiences you talk about on there, are what you're going to be putting in LinkedIn and other, profession-related sites. So I still think that the start, the foundation of you looking for a job is a great resume, because then you can, like if you looked at my LinkedIn profile, I went to my resume and I just lifted the bullets off of it and I pasted them in. I did a little bit of editing here and there for like, you know, if there's like any confidentiality things, but other than that, the content's exactly the same. Yeah. I would treat LinkedIn. Now, the nice thing about LinkedIn is that you have unlimited space. So, like, if you want to put everything there, you can. I would still focus on quality over quantity. I would still focus on, like, put the most important things at the top, and then, you know, it can go down from there. But I wouldn't just list, like, you know, I wouldn't just say, you know, Imagine Cup 2013 and then go on to the next topic. I mean, I would talk about what your project was, the things that you did, the technologies that you used. That quality of the content is really key.
Yeah, and on top of that, you can upload your CV to LinkedIn, which helps. So you can put your CV on there, which will be almost like the bullet points and the paraphrasing of what you've done. And then you can use LinkedIn if you want to go more in detail or provide links to certain projects or other mm-hmm. things that you've done that you're really proud of. I think that that's the appropriate space to do that. And likewise, on your CV, you can always refer and say, you know, additional experiences listed on my LinkedIn page here, which may be an interesting way to kind of loop in that social media for you as well. If you want to put a little more content and maybe some more experiences on LinkedIn, I think that's appropriate. And that provides your recruiter an easy connection point, right? So if I have to look at your CV and then copy and paste that into my browser to look at additional projects that you've done, it sometimes is easier just to go onto LinkedIn and click on those links as opposed to manually search. It's a little faster. So that may be another way.
One of the projects that we saw this week was called, it was a bundling project, where you could bundle links into one URL. So if that takes off, then you guys can use that too.
Yay, Magic Cup.
Yep. Other questions? No? All right, cool. So we'll wrap it up there. We'll be up here for 5-10 minutes if you have any individual questions for us. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. So that is important to put on there. If you're doing competitions, absolutely put it on there. And in that case, I think it's okay just to list like ACM, you know, 2012, you know, first place. That's probably the exception. To where I was saying you have to put bullets under things, I would say that is a good exception. So thank you for asking that. If you have done competitions, Imagine Cup, I would still talk about what your projects were, but if it was just like an ACM competition, something like that, saying, hey, first place, second place, fifth place, if you're participating in things like that, that's a good indicator to me that you're passionate about what you do and you're getting a lot of practice. So that's a good thing to put on there.
Yeah, and if you're going to put the place, I would say maybe specify. So you could say that you got second place, but if there's only two teams, that's going to dramatically.
And actually, if that's the case, I would just say second place. Yeah, but if it's like, you know, second place out of 100,
right,
like,
if you're
going to
put
absolutely.
The like seventh or eighth place, I would maybe put if there's a lot of teams that are competing and you got in the top 10, I think that's really important to note. And I think that that adds value to your resume. But yeah, just be aware of kind of what you put. So you could put seventh and there's eight teams and maybe that's going to discredit it a little bit. But I think it's still important to note. I think it's great when I see candidates that have those competitions mm-hmm. on their resumes, because it shows an additional passion outside of school and other things for computer science and for programming. And it's great practice, too, for interviews. So when you get to final interviews, and we'll have a talk later today about interview styles and what we look for, and I think that those programming competitions really help you think on your feet, and they help you really solve problems fast, which is what you're going to be expected to do when you go to interview for big companies.
Yeah. Yeah, they might. They might. Yeah, so if you participated in that, I would put it in your CV for sure. Any other questions? Yeah. Can you repeat the question? I would normally put, you'd put your contact information at the top, you know, your name, phone number, things like that. Then normally for someone who's graduating from university, what you would put next is your academic section, followed by your work experience or your, you know, projects, and then finally any clubs or activities you've been in. That's the typical format. Now, once you've graduated from university and you have several years of experience, then it would go contact information, then work experience, and then academics. But at this point, still your, you know, one of the most important things is going to be what you studied in university. That would normally go up towards the top. Yeah?
If I achieve something where I was in preparatory school, is this important for you?
I would say it probably depends a little bit about what it was that you achieved. If it's an achievement that's related to the job you want to have, then it might be something to put on there. But if it's an achievement that isn't all that related, then there's probably higher value information that you could share for a recruiter to know when it comes to your, you know, more recent experience.
Yeah, and again, your resume and your CV, what that's used for as a tool is literally to get you noticed and to just go into a yes pile. I've been telling candidates that have been going through the mock interviews, right? So as a recruiter, I'm looking at your CV and I'm either putting it in a yes or no pile. So a no pile would be like, no, we're not going to move forward at this time. And I'm being very blunt, but I think it's worth it to kind of know what our process is. So you're either going to go into the no pile, we're not going to move forward, or a yes pile, I want to see you for a first round screen, or I want to talk to you just to hear a little bit more about your interests. So what your CV is doing is literally you're trying to just attract that brief moment where a recruiter is looking at your resume and saying, and I'm using the terms interchangeably, resume and CV, but they're looking at your resume and they're automatically saying within maybe the first 10, 20 seconds, they're like, yes, I want to put them here. And so going into so much detail for things that maybe don't apply to the job isn't going to be as important. But then when you get that first round screen or you get those final interviews, that's when you can start using other experiences that maybe relate to the questions a little bit more in depth. So you can talk about your experience as a leader or on, you know, your Imagine Cup project. That's great, but hey, maybe I was also a leader for my basketball team that I played on. And so you can kind of tie those in together and say, you know, if I've had multiple experiences in leadership roles, and this has helped me formulate who I am today and why I would be really great fit for the company. Now, you don't necessarily have to put that you've been, you know, the captain of your basketball team on your resume, because maybe it takes up space that you want to use talking about computer science things to get you noticed, but it's good to mention later.
Yeah. I mean, maybe think about a little bit like writing a program. Like, you want it to be efficient and effective and not bloated and take up someone's time above and beyond what they need to know what they have to know to say, hey, yes, if we want to talk to this person some more. So, okay, we'll wrap it up there. We'll be up here for a few minutes if any questions that you have. Otherwise, thanks for coming. Appreciate your attention. And enjoy the rest of Imagine Cup. You're clapping for yourself. She's like, good job, Jeanette.